You're listening to AM 970, The Answer. And now, Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, the president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With me for the first time, our very special guest is Senator Andrea Stewart Cousins. And this is her first time on Reaching Out. Before she begins, I want to tell you that she was elected by her colleagues in December of 2012, becoming the first female leader of the legislative conference of New York State in the history of New York State. Welcome to Reaching Out.
Thank you so much. It's really good to be here. I know I haven't not had an opportunity to join you, but I know that you do a lot of good work and try and make sure that you reach out and that people who are in positions like mine have an opportunity to reach your audience. So thank you for having me.
Thank you. And I remember when you got elected in 2006.
Yes.
And for our audience, tell us your constituency, your senatorial district.
Sure. I am in Westchester County. My Senate district number is 35. So it is, for lack of a better word, and frankly the only word I could use, is it is a gerrymandered district. So that if you were to look at how the district is drawn, you would be able to see the profile of an old man, a smiling old man with a scraggly beard. So it is quite creatively drawn, and that creativity allows me to represent a portion of three major cities in Westchester. So I have half of Yonkers, okay. I have half of New Rochelle, and I have three quarters of White Plains. I also have the town of Greenberg. I have the river town, so that would include Hastings, Dobbs Ferry, Irvington, and Tarrytown. I also have Scarsdale. So my district, I have to say, is probably one of the most diverse districts in almost every way because, Scarsdale, for example, is probably, if it's not the richest zip code in the country, it is among the richest in the country. And then, obviously I have neighborhoods that could use a lot of economic help. So it's an interesting district, but I think it's reflective in many ways of New York State. And so I am very proud to represent the district and to work with everyone in order to make New York better.
Now you mentioned Yonkers. How are you, how do you work with the Yonkers Housing Authority?
Okay, I find, I've been able to work with municipal housing very well. Many people don't know, and I really do make an opportunity when I can to tell people that I grew up in public housing. So I grew up in New York City public housing. I lived in Amsterdam houses.
Really?
I did.
Wow.
Yeah. That's part of my story when I tell people about government. It's interesting because my dad was a World War II veteran. He was decorated, Bronze Star, Purple Heart, served in a segregated army, and was a hero. And when he came back, the GI Bill, which was supposed to make sure that the people who left to serve their country had an opportunity to come back, get back into their lives, jobs, education, homes. But the problem was that really wasn't for black soldiers. And so when my dad came back, the things that applied to his white counterparts didn't apply to him. So he wasn't, able to buy a home. The way the redlining, as well as the fact that places like Levittown, which was the biggest suburb, was part of their government covenant, said that these could not be sold to black people. The options for my dad and my mom at that time were very, very limited. But government did create public housing. So we moved to public housing. And obviously the government gave public schools. And so I had a public school education. When I moved up with my family to what we considered moving up, we moved to another public housing in the Bronx. So I lived in Parkside housing. It really wasn't until I was an adult that I got to Westchester. My mother, a lot of people don't know, she's really, really talented. She could type 100 words a minute. But during the time that she was looking for a job, people of color, certainly black women, were not going into corporate America. They weren't wanted. So my mother got an opportunity in civil service, and she became the head of the steno pool for the Corporation Council of the City of New York because of civil service and because of merit. I worked in private sector before I got into government. Again, I had already worked outside of government for 20 years before I got in it. And one of the things that happened in the job that I was in, we were trying to move up, but women, people of color, never had an opportunity to move up until there was a court intervention. And it was told to that corporation, at that point it was part of the Bell system, and it was like, no, you have to give people an opportunity to move up. And when I was given the opportunity, after probably 7 years or so, I got into sales, I got into marketing, and all of a sudden, you know, I had a different, you know, income, I had a car, things changed. So when I moved to Westchester, it was basically with my husband and I, we were just trying to get out of the traffic, trying to get out of the parking difficulties in New York City. But I mean, I always felt like I would always be connected to New York City. But when we got to Westchester, I became more and more involved. The kids were in school. But one of the things that was going on when we moved there was Yonkers in the 1990s, unbeknownst to us, was going to have to desegregate its schools and its housing. So interestingly enough, where we moved was a very, very mixed neighborhood. I thought that was the city of Yonkers completely. But it turned out that we were in one particular section on the west side of Yonkers that had I moved five blocks north, they would have been all white. Five blocks south, it would have been all black or Latino. And we were like right in the middle. And so kind of everybody was there. But it turns out that wasn't the situation that there had been. So I got involved in my civic life in Westchester through the fact that they were going to, you know, now face, I mean, there was real opposition to desegregation in the 1990s. And we had to make sure that since the city was told to desegregate and there was so much opposition, that our children who were now going to be bused and so on would be safe, and that people were really going to get the opportunities that were supposed to come when it came to desegregation. So, you know, the involvement I had, I mean, in the interim, just so you know, I'd been in sales and marketing after customer service in New York Tel. I became a journalist. I was teaching school. And at the point where all of these things were coming together, I began my political career first supporting the person who was running for mayor who wanted to desegregate the city. And then, of course, working with local organizations to make sure that we got it right. And so after this mayor won, he asked me to join the administration. I was surprised because I had never thought of getting into government. But I knew it was a critical time. And it was a time where the message had to be communicated, and he himself, his name was Terrence Zaleski, and he wanted to not only do the letter of the law, but he wanted to demonstrate the spirit of the law. So having someone like me in a key cabinet position that would go around the city and bring in, which was the major part, bringing in people who had up until then not ever you know, felt that they were part of or welcomed in government, as well as making sure that people who had always been involved in government still understood that, you know, this was a government that was still open and receptive and part of their everyday lives and wanted to be part of the everyday lives, as well as, you know, clarifying policies and so on and so forth. So municipal housing was part of all of that as well, because again, because it was municipal housing, it was largely in one side of town, and there were new housing, new municipal housing that had to be built on the east side of town, and that in and of itself was the subject of documentaries, one called Brick by Brick. There was another one recently, Show Me a Hero, where one of the mayors who you know, ultimately committed suicide was part of that. So the municipal housing in general, desegregation is how I got into where I am. And when I got there, it finally clicked for me how much government could do. Because the same government that, you know, my dad served,
yes,
segregated army, mm-hmm, was the same government that created the GI Bill, but same government that decided that he wasn't, and he and colleagues like him weren't worthy of those benefits. Same government that decided public housing was a good idea and public education was a good idea. Same government that decided that certain housing structures weren't going to be available. Same government that said it was perfectly fine to discriminate in corporate life. Same government that decided it's okay to have merit and you can take tests and go up. Same government. The difference was who was in it. Different was who's running it. So I decided if I'm going to be in it, I'm going to be in it for the right reasons. I'm going to be in it to remove barriers. I'm going to be in it to make sure that people can move in it according to their desire and their ability, not because government is standing in their way.
You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President of Local 237. Our very special guest is Senator Andrea Stewart Cousins. That was a wonderful introduction into, I didn't have to ask a question because it was like I was checking off my questions while you were going. I didn't have to ask, how did you get into politics? That's a wonderful story.
Thank you.
That's the beginning of a movie or a book. Probably a movie and a book one day.
One day I would love to write it, but again, it's my story. And, you know, I will say, by the grace of God, and I had great, great parents, everything is an incredible journey even for me up to this point.
Wow. So. Now, what are your priorities? You're the minority leader.
That's right.
What are your priorities if you became majority leader? Because you just outlined why you got into government.
That's right.
What would you do if you had the opportunity to be the as we would say, shot caller? What would you do?
Well, there you go. Yeah. Well, I think that you can hear that my emphasis is really on education, because I just see education as the great equalizer. And the more you are able to create an educational environment that is conducive to learning. And so, I mean, I think we need to figure out a way to rebuild our schools. You know, we talk about infrastructure in, yes, so many ways, but, you know, nobody's really thinking about how our kids in many instances are going into buildings that are crumbling around them. And how do you expect people to feel good,
right,
about where they're spending all this time if we haven't figured out ways that we can actually create an environment that's conducive to learning? So I just think that we have a responsibility, and it's K through 16. It's not K through 12. I mean, obviously we are very seriously doing pre-K, which is incredibly important. And I just think we have to emphasize education. We have to figure out ways to make sure that everybody has the technology that they need, that the teachers and the resources are there, the support is there. One of the things we were trying to do before we left and couldn't do was decoupling this test. They got into this, you know, all this testing with Common Core, and now Common Core is gone, and kids were tested, and then their scores were going to be part of their, you know, permanent record, and that has stopped. But still, the teachers are tied their evaluation, and I do believe everyone should be evaluated in terms of how well they do the job, but the evaluation should make sense for the job that they're doing. And it should be a tool to encourage their excellence and not, you know, kind of this punitive thing. So this kind of testing and teacher penalties is a carryover, and that's one of the things that, you know, I would want to stop. But again, emphasis on education. You know, the things that I talked about in my life when we talked about housing, I mean, yes. You know, I know we hear the stories about NYCHA every day. We hear the stories about public housing. You know, I think that people need to have safe, affordable spaces from which to launch their lives. And despite the fact that, again, the opportunities didn't abound for my parents, the place where we were was a home base that was a place where, again, our dreams could at least, you know, take root.
I mean, you grew up in Amsterdam houses,
yes.
Right across the street from Lincoln Center.
That's right.
It's still a prime area.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, so we have to make sure that we have affordable housing, that we sustain, you know, affordable housing. And I don't understand why we haven't found new ways to create more, you know, because again, what I'm looking, and you had asked me about municipal housing in Yonkers. I mean, what I'm seeing is that there is a really divestment of public housing from a federal level, you know, and all of these places are now being privatized. And, you know, folks who are, you know, depending upon at least government, whether it's subsidies or something, you know, not because they're not working hard, not because they don't, you know, want to have a different space to live, but because many times they're working 2-3 jobs and this is what they can afford. And, you know, I think that this divestiture in terms of the federal government in making sure that housing is affordable in this country and in this state, you know, is really a problem. So I'd like to see New York State, you know, when I think about Mitchell Lama houses, I mean, Mitchell and Lama were state legislators.
Oh, that's how they got together.
That's exactly. Okay. That's they
I
were.
I thought it was just one word, but
no,
that's not,
yeah. No. The last names of two people, one in the Senate, one in the Assembly, and they came together and created a program that allowed for the affordability of these houses. And so, you know, I can't believe in this day and age that we can't come up with a creative way to continue a legacy of making sure, certainly in a place like New York, where so many people depend on so many people to be able to provide the massive amount of services that are needed, why we can't find, you know, ways to sustain a variety of income levels in affordable quality housing. So I, you know, education, health care access, you know, I mean, you know, the basic, when I say remove barriers, I mean, I don't think, you know, those things should be barriers to getting, you know, where we need to go to. I think people need health care, they need housing, they need education, they need a clean environment, they need affordability. You know, these are all basic things. And in a place like Westchester, where I am, where taxes are so high, you know, and you have a federal government that's pretty much targeted places like where I live by capping how much you can deduct of your state and local taxes, you know, I'm always going to have to find ways, you know, to not only provide the services, but make sure they're affordable. So we try to, you know, ethics reform. We had another reconviction of Dean Skelos and his son. And obviously, you know, there's more that we can do in terms of accountability, in terms of closing certain loopholes. There is more that we can do even with gun. You know, we have the New York Safe Act, and one of the interesting things about that is, though, although it's one of the strongest gun laws in the country, and certainly there isn't a national gun law, what are our background check, because we do have a background check, but for example, our background check is 3 days. And what we've come to find out is that usually, if there's no problem, you'll get the answer in 3 days. So what we've been trying to do is expand it to 10 days, because if there is a problem, you don't get the answer usually in 3 days.
Okay. Yeah.
And so what happens is that if you don't have the answer in 3 days, we just give the person the gun. And the reality is that we should wait an appropriate amount of time so that if there are any red flags, those flags will come up and we will be able to keep guns hopefully out of people's hands. There are so many things we could do. I'm looking forward to the opportunity.
Keep the guns out of the people who should not have
them. The guns, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, if you're having a background check, you might as well have enough time to actually do it right.
Sure.
There are a lot of things that we could do just again to make New York a better place. And I know we're a limited amount of time, but I am looking forward to people voting, you know, in the primary, voting in the general, and making sure that their voices are heard.
Now, is there any piece of legislation over your career that you're the most proud of?
Oh, you know, I think one of the things that really, really makes me proud is when I came to Westchester, I served in the county legislature, and it was from, I guess, 1996, and around 1997 or 98, I realized after a series of things had happened with major corporations, with swastikas on synagogues, things that shouldn't have happened in Westchester. And I asked a simple question, like, where do you go if something like this happens? And there was no Human Rights Commission. There was nothing. And so I created with, you know, my colleagues, we had hearings and so on and so forth. And at that time, the Human Rights Commission for the county, and one of the biggest sticking points after people stopped denying that we needed it at all was whether or not we would extend those benefits to the LGBTQ community. And it was a 2-year fight. And we created, again, a very progressive commission at that time, because I couldn't, and my colleagues couldn't, figure out why we would have an anti-discrimination agency that discriminated. And so obviously the LGBTQ community was in it. And again, back in the day, in the early 2000s, it was a big, big deal. And I was very, very proud to stand up again. And that's all I want to do, stand up for people, stand up for their capabilities, stand up for their possibilities, and make sure that we as government aren't standing in their way.
Okay. Now, we're almost out of time. We have a couple of minutes left, but what I wanted to say, out of everything you told me, what sticks in my mind is you said the same government, and the difference is who is in charge, who's running it, who's elected. That's great, because a lot of people think that the government is broken and we need to abolish it. But that's a very important statement. It's who we have in office. So I want you to get last minute closing thought.
Well, you said what I really want people to take away, that the ideal of America, the dream of America, is a huge, huge dream. It's inclusive. It's ideal, but it has been taking root and growing year after year, generation after generation. It's just the vision of people. In 1919, women couldn't vote. We vote now. So the reality is that the expansion of this dream is what's been taking place, and the vision is from the people. And so it is up to us to decide who we are as a nation and fight for who we believe we must and can be as a nation. And you do that by activism, by being involved, certainly in your union. You know, we want to be able to continue to support working men and women, because we know that that's what helps. Again, the dream, nurturing the dream and creating that middle class. But you have to be involved. And you definitely, definitely, if you can, you must vote.
Thank you. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this edition of Reaching Out. I enjoyed this discussion. I'm Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237 Teamsters. Our very special guest was Senator Andrea Stewart Cousins, Westchester.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for listening to Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, President of Teamsters Local 237. Join us each and every Saturday night at 7, right here on AM 970, The Answer.